Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio. Good morning. It's the 29th of August. The sun is rising and Jesus has risen. That is good news indeed. If you listen to Faith Radio Mornings regularly, you know that we start our show the top of each hour declaring that central truth of our faith. That tomb is empty, and that means that the kingdom of Jesus is real and there is always hope and always future in the midst of our circumstances of this life. And this is Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host, Dr. Peter Kapsner, joined in studio as always by Logan Rausch and Paul Perreault, who keep the news flowing, keep the guests coming, just keep everything running smoothly. And the morning's grateful to be on the team with them as we talk about news from a Christian perspective and have conversations just on important matters of our faith and family and church together in a variety of ways. And that brings in Bill English into studio, who is one of our popular guests here on Wednesday mornings, coming in at the 7 o'clock hour and talks about Bible and business. And Bill, you've been with Faith Radio Mornings here doing this segment for quite a long time.
Yeah, I think I'm in my fifth year now.
Yeah, well, and Bill, you've been experiencing quite a bit of traffic, people calling and being interested in these topics of Bible and business and just the way you approach some of this.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. You know, first 3.5, 4 years I was on here, no calls, and all of a sudden, about once a month, twice a month, I get a call from one of the listeners who owns a business. And we're starting to engage with them and help them out.
I love that. And if you want to join the conversation with Bill and with Faith Radio Mornings at any time, you can call us at 877-933-2484 or text the studio as well. We love getting your texts in the morning, bring you on the air, or read your text live as well. That's 877-933-FAITH. And Bill, of course, I love to start sort of the top of the hour with maybe some theological quotes at times or maybe some fun news articles. And this one here really got my attention. So this is critical, life-changing stuff, Bill, that I need to get your perspective on. And it's really only you as a business person can help me understand.
Really? Only me?
Going on in the mind of Nabisco right now, because I don't understand this piece of it. But here's the headline. It says that Oreo cookies are rolling out some hot new flavors in China. The iconic American brand says hot chicken wing and wasabi flavored Oreos will hit the shelves soon in Asian markets. And instead of the traditional white cream filling, the hot wing features a bright orange shade of buffalo sauce. Bill, what's happening here within the interworkings of Nabisco?
Well, they know their audience in China. They know their market in China. They know that wasabi, whatever that is, wouldn't sell in the United States, but apparently it's going to sell in China. And that's what they're doing. They're revamping their product for their market.
Well, one of my favorite moments is we were eating sushi one night as a family, and that big dollop of green side, you know, that comes in the sushi. My son, he thought it was an avocado cream of some kind, so he took this huge just bite of the wasabi. It was pretty fun to watch the reaction. Is that has a way of clearing out the sinuses, doesn't it?
Is wasabi a hot thing?
It is. It's a hot thing that comes on some Asian dishes, really does have a way of clearing things out.
Raw fish has never appealed to me.
Oh, it just takes a little while to get used to it, Bill, as it wiggles down the throat like that. I mean, you kind have to get over the mental aspect of it.
Yeah, get over the mental aspect. I'll tell you, one time I was at a genuine Chinese restaurant in San Francisco, and they served us duck tongue.
Duck tongue?
Yeah, duck tongue. So they took tongues out of the ducks that they had killed, obviously, because they were serving duck.
Yeah.
And we got a whole plate of duck tongues. It was horrible. I tried one. It was one of the worst things, and I literally had to wash it down because I didn't want to be rude and spit it out, but boy, did I want to spit it out.
Yeah, I know. It is tricky when you go across different cultures. If you're listening this morning, you got a great food eating story, too, of unusual food. You know we love to hear these things on Faith Radio Mornings. It's 877-933-2484. 933-FAITH would get you into the studio, text or call. Bill, when we come back from break, one of the articles that's really popular on your site has to do with office politics. It's something so many of us deal with, and I would love to get your perspective on that next on Faith Radio Mornings. You know, Bill, one of my favorite things about having you in studio is that walk-up song on Huey Lewis in the News. You were able to introduce Logan, our producer here, 22 years old, to the fact that there was actually music in the 1980s that was worth listening to.
Some of it. The 70s, no. The 70s was awful.
Yeah, 70s kind of was this weird break between the 50s, 60s, and 80s. Right? So, nothing really happened in the 70s, it feels like.
Yeah, we should take the whole 70s and just give it to the Iranians. It would improve their culture. It would improve ours.
Well,
it would be a win-win.
Yeah, I'm sure we could buy it back with pallets of cash at some point, you know, and a covert flaying operation to buy the 70s back from them. So, well, we love having you on in studio here on Wednesdaysville, and I know it's a really popular segment. And you wrote an article on BibleandBusiness.com about office politics. And, of course, I think all of us that have worked in any workplace anywhere have experienced office politics, and it's not something to be trifled with. I mean, this really does end up driving where an organization goes, is how the politics go back and forth among people.
It drives how people look at the business. It drives how employees feel about it. It will negative office politics left unchecked will spill out into your customer base in some form or some fashion. And so leaders who don't face into the office politics and deal with it are leaders who probably are not going to have an outstanding business.
Yeah, and obviously office politics, when I hear that phrase, I immediately think negative, and we'll go to some of those places and how to deal with that in a minute. But is there a possibility of positive office politics? I've never really even thought about that there could be positivity in this, or are we just talking about something that's difficult for businesses?
I think we would call the positive office politics is great culture. I think we probably would just rename it. Office politics is the negative side of a great culture.
And I think in terms of some of the office politics that happens, so often things end up going sideways in conversations where maybe you have trouble with a colleague or you have trouble with a supervisor or you just have something. And then all of a sudden the gossip starts. And gossip is, I don't know of a more destructive force, not just in businesses, but in churches. I once heard a pastor say that, yes, infidelity and these large immoral issues do bring down businesses and churches, and justifiably so. But it's really gossip that has brought down more organizations than anything else.
You know, mature Christians protect the reputation of others. And in the Proverbs sense, I forget what verse it is, but, you know, it's to a man's honor that he overlooks an offense. You know,
yeah.
And so we accept others' faults and we protect their reputation precisely to preserve the unity of the body in a spirit of peace.
That's beautifully said. And that's not easy to do when you're feeling, you know, maybe uncertain about the situation. To actually go to somebody and have a conversation of something you're troubled about, it's a lot easier to go sideways and vent than it is to actually go have a conversation with somebody.
Because you don't have control of your emotions and you are triangulating. All gossip is, in a Bowen family theory sense, is triangles, right? So I have, let's say that you and I have a conflict and I don't go to you. What do? I go and dump on Logan.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
And now I create a conflict between Logan and you when none existed in the past. So my gossip not only doesn't deal with the conflict between me and you, it creates a conflict between you and Logan.
Absolutely.
But I feel better. And that's why I do it, because that's how I relieve my stress. That's how I relieve my emotions. Instead of putting my emotions under the control of the Holy Spirit and then saying, God, what kind of difficult conversation do I need to have with this person that I have a conflict with?
Yeah, it does poison things so quickly when we go sideways like that, like you
mentioned.
It
really does.
And so obviously when we get hired by an organization, it isn't necessarily because we're going to have this beautiful relational environment together. We get hired because of skills and expertise, and maybe it's on the resume, and we're kind of then just forced together organizationally a lot of times with people that we might not otherwise be friends with anywhere in life. And so how do you navigate tricky relational conversations with somebody that you probably wouldn't even have coffee with? You know, you're just sort of forced in the organization together.
Transparency and honesty, honestly. You know, it's when you are transparent and honest and direct with somebody, it's amazing the amount of power that you have in that conversation. Even if they're a superior, they're going to take a step back and say, well, okay, wait a minute, this person's being pretty appropriate, and I got to deal with this head on now. So you want to say, here's what I observed, here's what I thought about what I observed, here's what I felt, here's what I want for you, here's what I want for me, here's what we've tried in the past, and here's what I'll commit to doing in the future. Will you work with me on that? And you can clear up a lot of conflicts and a lot of office politics by simply doing those things.
Yeah, that's great advice. It's Bill English from BibleandBusiness.com. And again, if you want to join the conversation, you can call or text at 877-933-2484. That's 877-93-FAITH. We'd love to have you join. And I know many of our listeners contact Bill on a regular basis. And Bill, you mentioned something about with your superiors. Obviously, when you work in an organization, you're probably going to have a boss, unless you are the boss or solo entrepreneur. And how do you deal with power differential in these office politics? You know, in terms of, you know, at the end of the day, the boss has the power to make the call. And so how do you bring up some things if you see them differently as a pathway forward organizationally?
You know, I think before I talk about how you do that, you have to have a mindset of God is sovereign. He is in control of my life. And I'm always willing to be fired within the next 15 minutes.
Oh, I have never been willing to be fired in the next 15 minutes. So say more about that, because that is an incredibly important perspective in terms of how tightly we're grasping on to a given situation.
Well, I don't think you have to worry about that, because I can't imagine anybody firing the great Dr. Peter Capstone.
You know, and that's one of the great gifts that I have in life, you know, Bill. Just everybody loves me.
Everybody loves me.
Oh, yeah, jeepers.
No, but seriously, you always have to, as a consultant, I always live with the notion that I could be fired in the next 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
And that gives me the freedom, coupled with God's sovereignty and his promises that he will always meet my needs, that gives me the freedom to be direct and honest and loving and transparent all the time. And so when I know that I have that security in the background, I can take the risk here. And this is one of the basic principles of Christians assuming risk, is that the risk that you assume is always based on a foundation of God's providence and his goodness in our lives, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And you don't take that lightly, and you don't take unnecessary risks, but that gives you the context in which you can go ahead and say, okay, I'm going to go to my boss, and I'm just going to kind of level with him or her. I'm going to be direct.
Yeah.
But not mean, but direct. Honest.
Yeah, and boy, it does. So many of us, I think myself included, we do find our sense of security in having a job that I'm not going to get fired from, or that there's money coming in. And so when we come back from break, Bill, I'd like to explore this a little bit more about what it means to truly find your security and your future in the Lord and in his kingdom, as opposed to a given occupation that we have. So much more to come here with Bill English on Faith Radio Mornings. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings. I'm Dr. Peter Kapser, and this is so fun and delighted to get the wisdom and insight and humor of Bill English here on Wednesday mornings, part of BibleandBusiness.com. And Bill, we've been talking about office politics this morning, and as a Christian, how to handle some of these things. And boy, there's a lot we could talk about this for hours. And we were talking before the break about the idea of having our security truly found in a different location than in our occupation or our business, because, boy, we can compromise a lot of our decisions worried about our future financially and holding tightly to our job.
You will give up. You will negotiate away almost all of yourself for security. Look at what America has done with TSA and airports and other things. We are negotiating away our freedoms in order to have security. And so when a Christian finds their security in God rather than in their job, their money, so forth and so on, you'll find that less of themselves can be negotiated.
Yeah, and I think it's even a helpful practice, right, to just have a discipline each day to whatever kind of house or apartment or wherever you're living, to just look around and say, what if I lost all of this that I'm even currently living in? Would I be okay? And if you can sort of develop that spiritual habit day in and day out, it can really make a difference in how you approach your job.
It does. I agree with you.
So in terms of on the job, when you do then have people of power, supervisors that are sort of controlling the situation, you mentioned at the break just some of the characteristics on the flip side of what makes a good supervisor or boss or leader of an organization. What are some things they can do to help encourage their employees?
I think great leaders, great business owners encourage honesty, transparency, but not harshness or meanness, but honesty and transparency in their direct reports, not only between themselves and their direct reports, but in the relationships between their direct reports. So one of the things that I focus on when I'm building a management team is to say, you know, just because I'm the CEO doesn't mean you can't be honest with me about things that maybe I need to improve, because I'm certainly going to be honest with you, and we're going to ask each other to be honest about what's really going on. the lack of honesty and the lack of transparency is what leads to a lot of these office politics and a lot of this conflict, a lot of this gossip, triangulation, like we talked in the last segment. You have to have that. And leaders that don't encourage that will always have substandard organizations, will always have substandard businesses.
And as part of that, just as a leader, is it part of that how much you actually empower and your employees feel empowered? I know so often there's different sort of strategies for how to do leadership within a business. And I've owned a business for the last 14 years and have just kind of played around with some of these ideas that at one point you're responsible for the vision and the execution of the vision in the company. But if your employees are only there to execute your vision, it becomes something that's very demotivating as opposed to a collaborative vision-making exercise with your employees.
Yeah, you can't collaborate and you can't get their input into the vision without honesty and transparency.
Absolutely.
You can't get it. You can't just send out a survey from SurveyMonkey and say, please tell me what you think. You know, that isn't going to work, right? Because if people don't feel like they can be honest with you, even in the survey, they're not going to tell you what they think.
And just, you know, if we were outside of the organizational hierarchy, which, you know, it's the position that confers power so much more often than actually the person themselves. And if we were outside of that, there would actually be an invitation to collaboration. Why does that shift when we get into these organizations? Why does suddenly the hierarchy where somebody gets to control all the decision making on behalf of everybody else?
It's because the paycheck, the check. Book. You know, I pay you, therefore, in a sense, for 40 hours a week, I own you. And I don't mean to be harsh with that, but that feeling exists.
Yeah.
If I'm not paying you and we're working collaboratively and your security is found somewhere else, that's a different story. The Christian says, yeah, you're paying me, but my security isn't in you, employer. My security's in God.
Yeah, and that is such a freeing moment at those points. And like you said, be careful and strategic and honest, and we need to treat each other well, but to have your security somewhere else, it can alleviate a lot of the daily stress I think many people experience in their work week.
Christians shouldn't have their security in their job. They should have their security in the Lord. I mean, this is not new theology, right?
Right.
This is just living out the theology that we've been taught. But I think this kind of theology is one that we hear it on Sundays, or we hear it in a classroom, or we hear it on the radio, something like here at Faith Radio. And we go, yeah, I agree with that. But we never really say, I'm going to incorporate that and really live that out, because it's an attitudinal, it's a schema, a concept adjustment in how we think about things.
And is this what, as you're thinking about these kinds of Christian ideas, is this, as you consult with businesses, is this one of the things that you address pretty early on, is the office politics and how we see one another and how we interact? How quickly can you get a sense of organizational life? Can you kind of feel it in the air on the front end?
Actually, you do.
Yeah.
Actually, you do.
It's kind of in churches too sometimes, right? You can walk in and say, I don't know what's going on here, but it feels like there's something in the air.
Yeah. You walk in and you can just pick it up right away. Usually in the first interview, even before we have an engagement letter with somebody, if there's politics there, I can pick it up.
Yeah. And so do you go to the employees first? Do you go to the organizational leadership first? I mean, how do you sort of begin to sift out and mine out what might be happening organizationally?
Well, the way that Platinum does engagements is that we start at the bottom of the organization and work our way up, and we interview everybody, or at least as many as we can. If there's thousands of people, we don't interview everybody. But if there's, you know, 50 to 100 employees, we'll interview everybody. And by the time we get to the last interview, which is the owner, we pretty much already know what's going on, and we know what the owner doesn't know, and we know what the owner's blind spots are, and then we just basically are interviewing for confirmation at that point.
Yeah, you must have to have a pretty secure owner to allow you to come in and really mine out these details, or does that get at times pretty tricky for you?
Yeah, a lot of the reasons owners don't hire us is because they lack security in themselves, and they may not really want to know what's going on in their business. Believe it or not, there's a lot of owners that just, you know, I'm making my $250,000 a year, and yeah, there's a lot of human debris in my wake, but you know, I got my $250,000. I'm happy.
And you talk a lot about Christians assuming a risk. I mean, it really is risky for a business owner and even the organization itself to really consider who they are and how they function. And boy, it might surface some of these difficult realities, but that really is, at the end of the day, the only pathway towards health.
It's the only pathway towards health in a business and personally, and it's for business owners who are listening here, it's the only pathway towards getting a business that has value that you can sell when you're ready to sell. When the outside buyers come in and do their due diligence, if they sense that this thing is FUBAR'd, holy smokes, they are out of there, or you're going to get a low ball offer. Instead of getting $5 million offer, you might get $300,000, yeah. And you're going to wonder, well, why? And it's because it's not a turnkey solution. It's not a staff that they can hire and know that the staff will continue to run the business. They're going to have to come in and remediate that entire staff if you don't deal with these things. So you are damaging the long-term value of your business by not facing into office politics and by not managing the conflicts.
Yeah, so well said. I mean, you can have the most innovative products. You can have sort of the disruptive services. You can have what a business needs to make profit. But boy, if you don't have the relationships internally, that whole thing can fall apart.
And it can fall apart on you before you try to sell. And when it does, you're a turnaround. And that's where we come in and kind of help make things healthier. And we don't point the finger. You know, that's not what we do. We don't point the finger at the owner. We're not a harsh company. We don't come in and say, you know, you're bad, you're wrong, and all this kind of stuff. We just say, here's what needs to change, and we'd like to help you make those changes.
Yeah, it's Bill English of BibleandBusiness.com and the Platinum Group as well. Bill, before we run, just give our listeners a sense, if they wanted to get in touch with you again, how can they do so?
You know, they can email me just at Bill@BibleandBusiness.com. I suppose if they want to call me, it's 763-458-3722. That's my cell phone.
That's my favorite part, when you put your cell phone out in the air like that, Bill. Hey, thanks for joining us on Wednesdays. It's always such a delightful conversation. Yeah. We'll take a break for Breakpoint, and when we come back for the second half of this hour, we'll be joined by Cal Thomas, the most widely read op-ed syndicated reporter. We'll talk about media bias on Faith Radio Mornings. Great conversation on Breakpoint this morning, just about some of the science and the ethics around cloning. I know we're looking for some guests to come on and talk about bioethics and just this cloning idea moving forward. I had a chance to see the first cloned animal, Dolly the sheep, who's at a museum in Edinburgh. And it brings about some troubling and interesting realities. So we'll find some guests here on Faith Radio Mornings for that. And coming up next, we'll be joined by Cal Thomas, who is the most widely read syndicated op-ed contributor. And he had an article in the New York Times I want to ask him about liberal bias. That is coming up next on Faith Radio Mornings. Yesterday on Faith Radio Mornings, we were joined by Drew Griffin of ProvidenceMagazine.org, and they talk about Christian values and global policy, and he was reflecting on the life and legacy of John McCain.
Even in that final statement, you know, he was unsuccessful in his runs for the presidency, but he was complimentary of those who bested him and supported them and wanted to see them succeed, even though he did not. And I think that's something that's sorely lacking in our politics and in our culture right now. And that's one of the things, like, when you are secure in who you are and in your purpose, and you recognize that you're not the ultimate in this world, then you're typically comfortable if other people succeed. And you're comfortable if you're not always coming out on top. And it allows you to be gracious and allows you to be humble. You still have your convictions. You're still strong. You still stand for what you believe in, but you don't have to be a jerk about it. And I think that's something that I think we sorely need in politics.
Great insight from Drew Griffin, especially in this polarization. I mean, we could really do well to not get committed to just one particular ideology, to learn from across the spectrum and across the aisles, and especially as believers, for us to model that togetherness and that commitment to one another, regardless if we disagree. So important. If you want to catch that entire segment, you can head to myfaithradio.com and listen to all of what Drew had to say. Well, coming up next here in just a moment, we'll be joined by Cal Thomas, who's one of the most widely read op-ed syndicated writers, and he had an article in the New York Times that got my attention around how bias can be shaped within the media. So coming up next on Faith Radio, we'll be joined by Cal Thomas.
Change isn't easy. In fact, most people hate change. Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. The thought of making changes at home is scary and challenging. We keep doing things the way we've always done them, and getting out of the rut takes energy and cramps our style. Another reason people don't like change is that it's often preceded by conflict. But let me turn this on its head. Conflict that leads to change can be a good thing. It might be just what your family needs. When the rut you're in eventually leads to the wrong place relationally, it's worth the work to get out of it. I challenge you today to see conflict and change as good things, even though they're hard.
There's more from Mark Gregston on the Parenting Today's Teens website. Go to parentingtodaysteens.org. ParentingTodaysTeens.org.
About 20 minutes for the top of the hour here on Faith Radio Mornings. I'm Dr. Peter Kapsner, and happy to be joined on the line at this moment by Cal Thomas, who is one of America's most widely read syndicated op-ed columnists. And you can find his work all over, from the New York Times, USA Today, Fox News, even across the political spectrum. Cal, thanks for joining us this morning.
Well, thanks very much for having me. Let me just make a couple of minor corrections there. Fox News, I'm not on anymore. They didn't renew my contract. The New York Times, I do not write for. I had one piece in there in 1983. I doubt they'll even carry my obituary. And the USA Today Common Ground column with Bob Beckel ended about 2 years ago. Other than that, you're right up to date.
Oh, you know, Cal, this is such a great example of how we in the media just have our facts straight all the time, right? I mean, just incredibly reliable news sources. I saw your article in the New York Times, so they must have somehow picked it up from somewhere and put it in there about even just
Washington Times. It was the Washington Times.
I got you. Well, it was an incredible article that you wrote, just even talking about,
I think,
something that we all suspect. And that is that we're not always getting, whether we're watching Fox News, whether we're watching CNN, we're not just getting straight factual stories. We're getting what I guess were called, for me growing up in journalism, an angle or a point of view. But it's sort of has tipped into actual bias in terms of what is being on either side of the spectrum.
Well, in order to understand facts, one must start with a beginning. Now, you know, Pontius Pilate, in that great church-state moment before Jesus of Nazareth, said, what is truth, when he had truth standing right before him? So, and we've had arguments over what truth is. The problem in Washington and so many other places today is that truth is no longer objective in the minds of many people. I have my truth, you have your truth, and if it makes me feel good, that's fine for me. And even if the opposite truth is true for you, that's fine for you as long as it makes you feel good. And this has polluted our political system, where no problem really gets solved, whether it be the size or cost of government or so many other things. And that's a problem for all of us. We have career politicians in Washington who come here and never leave. The late John McCain spent over 40 years here. It's so easy to get out of touch when you get free parking, you get discount haircuts, you get people bowing and scraping to you. You've got a retirement program that's better than any of us could ever have, with the government paying for your retirement. You get free flights back to your home state or district. All of these other perks. I mean, who wouldn't want something like that? Oh, yeah, and free health care, too. Who wouldn't want something like that? What a deal. And you get here, and truth no longer matters. It's only getting reelected that matters. And that's why we have such dysfunctional government.
It's incredibly well said. I mean, it makes me just want to leave my job from Faith Radio this morning and be part of the political class in Washington, D.C., Cal.
I don't think so. They don't call it the swamp for nothing. The problem with the swamp is it's got a lot of bacteria in it, and when people get here, they get infected real fast. Even those who run on the highest plane and the most noble platforms, I'm going to come to change Washington. No, you're not. Washington will change you, either for the better or for the worse. Ronald Reagan was one of the few people who left here who was the same as when he entered office. That doesn't happen very often.
And journalists, you know, historically have viewed their profession as holding those in power accountable. But have we tipped into something different now, where there's such pressure to monetize the news, whether you are part of CNN or Fox News or MSNBC, these different almost political outlets, the pressure to be financially solvent really can shape the journalistic approach?
Right. Well, it is a business first, after all. But there was this debate with David Brody of CBN News and Chuck Todd on Meet the Press last Sunday. And you know, people should look up the transcript because it's very revealing. Brody was pointing out to Chuck Todd that 62% of Americans no longer trust the media. But that was no big deal for Chuck Todd. He blamed it all on Fox News for polluting the atmosphere. This is the only business I'm aware of that doesn't care what its customers or potential customers or now former customers think. They think they're right. They have the truth. Everybody else is wrong. Well, you try that in any other business, whether it's hamburgers or selling gasoline, you're going to go out of business real fast because people can find other sources of information. Fox News is not the problem. NBC, CBS, ABC were the problem, where they had a singular worldview that they were promoting with the American people. And then when people realized through talk radio, Rush Limbaugh and others, yourself, that there were other views to be heard, they gravitated toward their views. Now, do too many people tune in only to those things that reinforce what they already believe? Yes. We should have a balanced diet in our food, and we should have a balanced diet in our information. And then if we start out with a base of truth, which for me is the scriptures, then we can judge whether something is right or wrong based on that objective standard.
Well, I think it's so important, as you said, to be anchored in the scriptures. And I talk often here on Faith Radio Mornings that we're not going to be shills for either the Republican platform or the Democratic platform, but that we'll try to look articulately at each platform and try to mine out what those policies might be that can be helpful. Because it's actually possible, Cal, is it not, that Democrats might have something to say that is helpful and useful, and Republicans might have something to say that's helpful and useful at the same time?
Well, sure, but we no longer respect each other. You know, if you're a Democrat, the Republicans think, I can't even have lunch with you. I'll give you a perfect story. Right after 9/11, where George W. Bush made that tremendous speech to the joint meeting of Congress, came down from the podium, and the first person to greet him and embrace him and kiss him on both cheeks in traditional Orthodox Jewish style was Joe Lieberman, Senator, Democrat from Connecticut. Now, his opponent, Lieberman's opponent in that upcoming race in Connecticut, used that video against him as some kind of a negative, and the opponent won, but Lieberman had so much integrity that he won as an independent. But that wouldn't happen now. I mean, if you're seen even eating with somebody in Washington on this so-called other side, somebody with a cell phone is going to take a picture and use it against you. People label each other. They don't know each other. Families don't come to Washington very often with a member of Congress anymore. There's really no social life here anymore where people of different persuasions and parties get to know each other. And the divisions are worse than I've ever seen them. And the fundraisers, of course, and cable TV exacerbate this by having the most extreme people on their programs shouting and yelling at each other, and nothing ever gets solved. But the money keeps flowing in, and we keep electing these people, and so basically it's our fault in the end.
That's Cal Thomas, who has been in journalism for the better part of three decades and more, and has just seen and written so much throughout the Washington area and the swamp that can often be there. Cal, we're going to take a short break, and we come back, and we're going to ask you even just about the idea of fake news. Is this really a thing, and how does this work? Our president seems to tweet about that relatively often. So quite a bit more to come here with Cal Thomas on Faith Radio Mornings. About 10 minutes before the top of the hour here on Faith Radio Mornings, and joined on the line by Cal Thomas. And Cal, we've been talking about the news and even a bit of fake news, and apparently I'm a bit of a perpetrator of fake news myself. I, you know, had thought that you'd written for the New York Times, but I was wrong. So you got to clarify for us, Cal, where can we find your work these days?
Well, all of my columns are published in on my webpage, calthomas.com, along with the transcripts of my radio commentaries. But you should check your local newspaper around the country, wherever you are. Ask the editor if they carry me, and if they do, thank them. And if they don't, ask them if they consider it under the Fair and Balanced banner.
I love it, Cal. That's great. Well, it's been fun to just get your perspective from the years that you've covered Washington, D.C. And the president has really obviously made a point over and over and over and over again on Twitter that there is such thing as fake news out there. Does he have a point in all of this? Is there really a bias that's taking shape against any kind of president? Because President Obama would have said that the news is against him as well.
Well, yeah, every president thinks the press should worship them. John Kennedy canceled a bunch of newspaper subscriptions in the White House for the New York Herald Tribune because he didn't like their editorial coverage or policies and coverage of his administration. Going back to George Washington, there's been bad press for a president. That's not necessarily a bad thing. Helps him be honest. But with Obama, I mean, I've never seen more worshipful press than he got. Apparently, he thought he ought to get 100%. But, yeah, there is a lot of fake news out there. The mistakes that are made, this latest thing with Lanny Davis and CNN as a source on the Michael Cohen situation, the original story makes page one. The retraction and the apology, if any, if it gets carried at all, is buried somewhere in the paper. So truth never catches up with the error. I want to recommend a terrific book in light of what the president said about Google and the social media. I've just finished reading it. It's called World Without Mind, The Existential Threat of Big Tech. And Even the New York Times spoke favorably of this book when they said that in his brilliant polemic, the author Edward Foer, F-O-E-R, gives us the toolkit to fight their pervasive influence. Google and Facebook are controlling the flow of much of what especially the millennials and younger people read. And they have an agenda. Google contributes millions of dollars to left-wing organizations. They claim they're not biased. They are. If you read the backgrounds of their founders and some of their employees, they're liberals, they're Democrats, they were Hillary Clinton supporters. And that is bound to color your worldview and what you think is truth. They take down stories that they don't like, that they think are wrong, and they put up stories whether they're right or wrong or not, as long as they are anti-Trump. The president's completely right about that, and it needs to be fixed.
And the pathway forward is so difficult because we have gotten so used to just Googling stuff. I mean, it's a term we didn't even have in our country 20 years ago, but now we sort of assume Google is a source of reliable information. And the stats are that 97% of people never make it past the first page of Google. And we talk about this in my classes quite often, that just because it's on the first page of Google doesn't make it more reliable. And in fact, there's an information control that's happening relative to what appears. And it's often who pays the most amount of money to get on that first page.
That's exactly right. And, you know, just relying on Google and their platforms for information is like watching an exercise video thinking you're going to get into shape. You've got to dig it out for yourself. I mean, this cannot be observational democracy. It's got to be participatory democracy. Reagan used to say we're only one generation away from losing it all. This constitutional republic is not the natural state of humanity. If you look around the world, you see intolerance, bigotry, Muslim fanaticism, denial of women's rights, fake elections like in Venezuela and Iran. This is a unique country in a unique part of the world. And if we don't fight to keep it, then we're going to lose it in just one generation. And I think we're already on the verge of that. I'm just completing a book right now on that very subject, which I hope will get published soon, and I can come back into your program and tell people about it.
I would love for you to just – so what's the basic premise of the book, just sort of this increasing divide of the power and the powerlessness and just sort of the deconstruction of culture?
Yeah, the basic premise is based on an essay written by the late British diplomat Sir John Glubb, who studied 3,000 years of human history and found that there was a pattern to the decline of great nations and empires. And every single one of them, to one extent or another, followed the same line. And the last stage before the collapse of a great nation or an empire is decadence. And he subdivides the word into the following. Unrestrained immigration without assimilation, a loss of a religious sense and a sense of God, and, you know, a loose moral sense where nothing is right or wrong anymore. And the United States is on that path, and Glubb found that the average age of these empires and nation states, with a few exceptions, but they still follow the same pattern, is 250 years. Mm. And on July 4, 2026, the United States will be 250 years old. And unless we get turned around, mostly morally and spiritually, which can only come from God, not from politicians, we are at risk for losing it all.
Yeah, and it's certainly if we don't learn the lessons of history, right, Cal? And the reality is there's only one kingdom that has no end, and that's the kingdom of Jesus. And so there is the threat that in America could fall.
Well, that's right. And again, in that ultimate church state moment, Jesus said, my kingdom is not of this world, and that's good enough for me. And I think one of the great temptations, especially of a lot of believers, and I wrote this in an earlier book, Blinded by Might, Why the Religious Right Can't Save America, is that we too often focus on this world and not on the kingdom of God, which is the only kingdom with power that will last forever. Paul tucks a little verse away in Romans 8, where he says, God has built futility into his creation in hope that the creation will turn to him. We've tried both parties. We've tried all philosophies. None of it is working. It's time to turn to God. Only he can work.
Now, and boy, and one of the representative ways in which we do demonstrate our faith is we are truly willing to listen to each other. And Cal, we've got about a minute left here. And I find in the passing of John McCain that there's even a sort of a final message sent from the senator and the fact that he's asking President Obama to do one of his eulogies. I can't remember the last time that there's been a working across the aisle in such a public way like that.
Well, there are two John McCains. There was the hero in Vietnam who withstood 5.5 years in a North Vietnamese camp, was beaten and tortured. That's one McCain. Nobody takes away anything from him. Then there was the political McCain. I hear about all this bipartisanship all the time, but when I hear about it, it usually means if you're a Republican and give in to what the Democrats want, then you're being bipartisan. But if you're a Democrat, and you never give in to anything the Republicans want. The Republicans are then called, if they stand on principle, bigots, hate-filled, sexist, racist, homophobes. But the Democrats never compromise on taxes, on big government, on any of the social issues. When was the last time you heard a Democrat say that they were pro-life? They're an endangered species out there. So I love the idea of bipartisanship, but in order for something to be bipartisan, bi means two. The other side has to give too.
Pat Cal, it's a great point, and we've got to run. We're just out of time, but we'd love to have you back on as your book comes up. It's just such a great perspective out of Washington, D.C. We'll take a break and wrap up the last moments of our show. Such a great point from Cal Thomas that we've tried Democrat, we tried Republican, a variety of ideologies. It's really only the kingdom of Jesus that remains. That tomb is empty, and there's always hope in the future. Catch you tomorrow, everybody.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.